Welcome to Just Break Up, the podcast about love, heartbreak, and all the relationship advice you don't want to hear. My name is Sierra DeMolder.
And I'm Sam Blackwell. And this week we're going to tackle topics like watching our friends try to cope, being triggered by our partner's desires, and falling out of love. But before we begin, we just want to give you our Surgeon General's warning, which is that we are not in any way qualified to do this.
Not qualified. In fact, we recorded the intro three times because the first two intros, Sam and I forgot to say our own names. So if that's any proof after 108 episodes that we are not qualified.
We haven't gotten any better.
Not at all.
We are just as unqualified.
Yep. Please take our advice as you see fit. We are only here to offer our humble musings, so please shed some understanding and maybe some laughs on the incredibly rewarding but mostly confusing thing that is love. By the way, it's episode 108 now. Can you believe?
That's amazing.
We passed the 100 milestone, and now they're just racking up. Anyway.
Yeah, it's great. Unfortunately, like, the milestones get less and less exciting now.
Well, they get harder to reach. Like, what are we going to be, 120, you know?
Like, we're not going to celebrate that.
150
I celebrate this podcast every day of my life, though, so.
Yes, by working. And recording and reading letters.
That's right.
We celebrate all of you through our labor, happily, joyfully. Anyway, welcome to this episode. What's our check-in topic today, Sam?
Well, Peter and I have an anniversary coming up.
Yay!
Which is super exciting.
Happy year early two. Anniversary.
It's been a wild couple of years, I'll tell you what.
Yes, it has.
But we were talking the other night about what we want to do for our anniversary. And, you know, the fact that we can't really go places right now was a damper on our usual habit of like going to dinner or going to a play or something like that. And I thought it would be fun to brainstorm ideas. This is all like very self-serving. Brainstorm some ideas of like things you can do to celebrate big milestones in COVID when it's so hard to be joyful and celebrate.
And you shared this on a Patreon episode, but you're also doing a Sober September, right?
Yes, also
so
I'm doing that.
Celebration cannot include like bubblies or anything.
I mean you it could can do include some bubbles, mocktails. Just no alcohol in it.
Yeah, you and your bubbly water. You know what's so cute? My little niece and nephew, they call LaCroix or seltzer spicy water.
Oh, that's cute.
Isn't that so cute? They're two, so.
Yeah, when my nephews were little, they called it tickle water, so.
Tickle water. Oh, my God, so cute. Okay, and I also think that we can connect this to, we've been getting a lot of questions about COVID dating or, like, dating practices in times of a pandemic and making sure everyone's safe. How do you celebrate or, like, it's either, like, how do you date in COVID, but also I think we're gearing this answer or this check-in topic towards more, like, how do you break out of the rut of quarantine and celebrate those special milestones while staying safe? What are your do you have any instincts so far? What are you guys leaning to? Because you normally go see plays, right?
Yeah, so what I'm leaning towards is getting takeout from our favorite restaurant, which is probably where we would go anyway, which is really great that they're offering takeout, and supporting local restaurants is important. And then I think I was thinking like one of us, like we could each pick our favorite movie and like watch a double feature. Which will be a hard transition because like mine is like Pride and Prejudice and his is like The Shining. So like...
I thought it would be like Dumb and Dumber. You know, like that's a difference.
Right. Or I was also thinking because Hamilton is on Disney Plus, like that would be like a replacement for going to a play.
Plus, we could it's do like fun, a million like... hours long. So you could, it would be like watching a double feature.
Oh, absolutely. And we could like make popcorn and like do it upright. And we would get like.
You should do like a Peter's candy favorite, bar. Like,
yeah, that'd be cute too.
And for me, it's like, actually, Willow and I are going camping next week, which I know is a practice that you don't ideologically understand.
I don't get it. Why would you sleep on the ground when you could sleep in a bed?
But it's our fake honeymoon.
Cute.
We weren't we can't go on a honeymoon because we don't want to spend money on it, but also because of COVID. So I'm just like bawling out on snacks. For me, it's like if there were a love language, if there was a sixth love language, it would be food. So I always, you know, I say that you and Peter, if you guys like candy or have sweet tooths or whatever, you should get, you just go all out on snacks and have like a candy bar that you eat while watching your show. The other idea that I thought of that I've been meaning to look into is some of my family members did a virtual escape room.
Oh, cool.
I know. And so I don't know what the parameters, I don't know what other similar opportunities are out there, but it sounds like that a lot of stuff are becoming, there's becoming like a virtual thing. Like my sister and her family recently did like a murder mystery sort of game, you know, not like the how to, what's the one that is advertised on other true crime podcasts that you have like how to catch a killer
to catch
or something?
A killer or something, yeah.
Or some, yeah, sponsor us. even though we have nothing to do with murder other than crushing my heart. But, you know, some sort of like virtual activity that is, that puts you out of your comfort zone. That would be the only thing. Because Willow and I watched like a ton of movies over when we were in like heavy quarantine. So I'm kind of like movie night out because that was our go-to date for like 3 months.
Yeah, I love the idea of like seeing if there's like a subscription box out there that sends you a different game or something every month. Because I think that's just such a good way to break out of the rut.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
we watch TV every night.
Right, exactly. Like,
how
exactly.
do we make it more exciting?
Yeah. What else could you do? This is definitely not your style, but you could do a porch picnic. Like, you know, but then you're like, why am I eating on the ground? We got to eat at a table. Very similar to learning camping.
You understand me so well now.
I do. I really do. what else could you do? Let's see. I'm thinking about things that could like put people out of their, again, out of their normal routine. I got into, I've always loved baking, but recently I've been like, fuck it. I'm going to make a really bougie ass cake. So you guys could like do some intense cooking projects together. I know you guys both like to cook.
That's a great idea. Like, I love baking. So
yeah, you know, to like frost a beautiful cake or whatever, and then just eat it all in bed together.
Again,
what?
We don't eat things in bed.
I don't know. we definitely do, if you know what I mean.
Wow.
I'm sorry. It's so easy. No. Come on.
It was great. I loved it.
Thanks. What thinking outside of your relationship, I'm trying to think about what other people could do. Oh, here's something I've always loved to do when I have energy and time and a lot of love. Like a fun treasure hunt around the city in places that are important to you that aren't COVID. That are COVID friendly. Like, I don't know, you could go to the park where you got engaged and you could like hide something for Peter. Good thing he doesn't listen to the podcast anymore. And then he'd have to go to another place. And then like one of the clues could be like, go pick up our dinner at the takeout place. I'm all into treasure hunts.
When really they're just instructions like for him to do things for me.
Yeah. To like pick up errands. Yeah.
Yeah. Go to the dry cleaner and get my suit. Just kidding. I don't wear suits anymore and I definitely don't get things dry cleaned.
Yeah. That's funny.
I was also thinking like a nice bath of some sort, like some sort of like self-care thing for both of us, like masks and bubbles and all of that good stuff.
So cute. Well, that's, I wonder if like, I don't know if you like the treasure hunt idea. It doesn't really feel like a Sam Blackwell approved thing. But you could like hide little packages around the city and hope that like squirrels or, you know, hipsters don't find them and, you know, root around, which could include, or maybe you just like wrap up presents for him and it's like candy bar, face mask, bubble or bath bomb, favorite movies, or a Disney Plus subscription. I don't know if you have one already.
We don't, but we use my sister's friends. They don't know that we use it. Just FYI.
Sorry, Carol, or whoever her name is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I had something and then it left my head. So
do you do like massages?
I'm not very good at massages. I don't have your witchy fingers.
Do you want to explain that to the listeners, or else I just sound like a perv?
Sierra has, I don't know how to describe them besides witchy fingers, which is like, she's just very hands. Good at massages.
Yeah, and I'm like, very good.
You know where the things are to touch. Which is how I describe sex as well. And I do not have those skills.
Yeah,
my hands
yeah.
are
also,
very
Sam,
weak. They're
Sam
frail.
Wasn't really raised with a lot of like physical touch, right? Like that, no. Like, you know, so I was like, he's like, my neck hurts. I was like, let me give you a neck rub. And he was like, oh God, what's happening? But he liked it so much that he stayed. But I could tell, it's like when it's like when you pet a cat and they're like, this yeah. feels good, but I'm not in control.
Exactly. Yes. Just why massages are just not.
Yeah. Yeah. For yeah.
Me.
Okay.
So.
Anyway. Okay. So no massages.
But massages for other people. Great idea.
Peter. Oh no, you mean other, yeah, yeah, other relationships.
Yeah.
I'm definitely really into the online virtual experience game, or a subscription box, like you said. I do know that there are, like, I think because we're a relationship podcast, I always get ads on Instagram about, like, couples questions, games, so you can, like, ask each other questions and stuff like that.
Yeah, Peter gave me one of those for Christmas. And then we didn't use it. So now's the time.
God.
We'll bring
then
it out.
Use it. Yeah. Actually, you totally should. What else?
Maybe we'll get a dog.
Yeah. Opal just snuck up into the Zoom screen. I think that's like tapped out for me. What would Willow and I do? For me, it's always about your partner and what they need or what helps them. And Willow is the type of person who like needs help clocking out. So I would probably like make a really good meal, get a nice bottle of wine and go for a walk and then like lay and watch the sunset. But that's what I would do.
Cute.
Yeah. Yeah. If you guys have any suggestions about how to celebrate milestones, you can hit us on our Instagram. You can DM us, slide into our DMs at justbreakuppod.com and I'll post all of your answers.
Yeah,
or how have
do.
You been celebrating things in COVID?
I love that. And like, we'll share them. And also, like, if you could do it before September 15th, that would be really fantastic for me.
Everybody send Sam a happy anniversary on September 15th.
Oh, my God.
Good,
please
good
do.
Wedding. Wonderful wedding. Except for my jumpsuit was falling apart. If you go back and listen to the episode, it was probably like our 20th or 18th episode. It was really early when Sam got married. You'll hear a recap of the whole wedding. It was fun.
It was super fun.
All right, let's get into some letters.
Let's do it. All right, our first letter comes from Maggie Brown, who is writing from the Netherlands. Dear Sam and Sierra, a letter from the Netherlands. I discovered your podcast about a week ago, and since then have started binging your episodes chronologically, and it feels like I'm getting to know you more and more.
So charming.
I know, right? You are getting to know us more and more because we don't have filters when it comes to this podcast.
We slowly fall apart from episode 1 to 108.
I am a 27-year-old bisexual poly woman and an English major. Hi.
Hi.
And I love how inclusive you guys are of poly, even when you're not poly yourselves. You guys are awesome and often make me cry with your affirmations. I do deserve love. So yeah, thanks for telling me. This letter is not about me, though. I am writing to ask you for advice on how to talk to a 25-year-old friend I worry about. We've been friends for over 5 years, and I'd say close friends for 3 years. When I got to know her, she was still together with her ex. They got together when they were very young, about 14, and at some point the relationship was more of a brother-sister thing, and they decided to break up. It was a friendly breakup, but of course it was sad. This breakup is 8 months ago. A few months after the breakup, she started dating a friend of mine. Let's call it a situationship. It was on and off and not necessarily healthy and definitely a rebound. She often felt
rebound.
Very... a rebound. Whatever.
Bond. Rebound. That was a nice great work. Joke.
She often felt very insecure because of the things he said or didn't say. They broke up after a couple of months, and then, I think, right after she started dating this guy from Tinder. It all went really fast. She had sex on the first date, and on the third date, they went on a weekend away together. As someone with very severe fear of commitment, this really freaked me out, but let's not talk about me. Everything was perfect, although she did feel very insecure because everything went so fast. Then after the trip, this guy drops a bomb and says, "Oh, yeah, you know I'm Jewish, right? I realize now I can't actually marry a non-Jewish woman, so we can't have anything serious. I'm religious myself and think this guy is a total a-hole. My friend was heartbroken and they broke up. This was 3 weeks ago. In the 3 weeks after, she slept with 5 different men and is currently working on her next project. She doesn't identify as poly and she doesn't tell these men what they can expect from her. I'm very sex positive and my friend often feels like she never feels judged by me. I love that and I want to keep it that way. It's true, I don't judge, but right now I do worry. Her behavior doesn't look healthy to me. She often tells me that what's going on in her life is a lot and that, as we say in Dutch, she has a full head. I guess in English she would say something like, her head is overflowing.
Oh my God, I love She's, that.
I know, right? My head is always overflowing. She has often said that she would take it easy for a bit because she knows that would be better. And then the next day she has sex with a new person again. To me, it seems like she has a lot to process. She doesn't have the stability anymore that she had in her relationship with her ex. She found a guy who she adored who dropped her like a brick, another Dutch saying for you. And she is very insecure about a lot of things. She doesn't seem to be doing much of the head and heart work to process all this, but copes by just sleeping around faster than her head can keep up with. Mm. Adding to that, in times of COVID-19, 6 guys in 3 weeks seems like a lot of physical contact, especially because she's a doctor. A mutual friend of ours is a little bit more direct than me, and my friend has stopped talking to her about her love life. This suggests to me that she does know what she's doing isn't necessarily healthy. My question for you is, how do I tell her that I worry about her without her feeling judged? I'm afraid that she will push me away and that me expressing my concern will actually have a negative effect because she will further isolate herself. I would love to hear your opinions and insights. Lots of love from the Netherlands. Marguerite. You can call me Maggie. Also, if I said your name wrong, I am very sorry about that.
Yes, thank you so much for writing, Maggie. It sounds like you have a lot of really genuine and respectful care for your friend. And I really appreciate all of the clarification you added in your letter about, you know, not judging, that it's not coming from a judgmental point of view. And it's not mm-hmm. judging her sexual activity. It's more judging her mental, or not judging, not judging. It's more concern for her wellness and if her
yeah.
actions are supporting her wellness. Because just to clarify for anybody listening who hasn't like caught on in the past 180 episodes, Sam and I don't care how many people sleep with. You can sleep with 0 people, mm-hmm. 1 person, 50 people. It doesn't have to do with a number. It has to do with making healthy, sustainable, fun choices for you and your genitals.
And the people, to be clear, that you are
right,
having
right,
sex
right,
with.
Right, 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 right. Consensual, right?
Yes.
So I appreciate that clarification because I remember reading the first couple paragraphs of this letter and being like, oh, God, don't judge your friend. But then being like, oh, no, it's not that. It's more mm-hmm. a genuine. And I think I've been there where I've been like, this is not going to end well. Or, you know,
yep.
My friend is just having one of those times where she's got a, she is acting out because she's hurting emotionally. And I'm not even talking about just
absolutely.
Sexually. I'm really talking about probably more drinking or whatnot. I think I've witnessed it most as chronic, compulsive monogamy. It's like you go from mm-hmm. one heartbreak and not wanting to deal with it. So you go on to another relationship.
I've also seen it being acting out in like people having affairs. I've mm-hmm. also seen it acting out in people. I have seen it acting out in people on like what the OC, the teen show from the early 2000s, would call a slut spiral.
Oh my God. That's terrible. Did they mean it in like a very offensive way?
Yeah, I think they did, but then I co-opted it, and now I just say it like in a positive way, like,
oh,
ooh,
yeah.
Are you on a slut spiral?
Ooh, yeah. Gonna ride that hurricane. All right.
Absolutely.
So Maggie, my darling, that all being said, I think that you have an opportunity here to be, to do what Sam and I love to do, which is to give a lot of love and a little bit of tough love. I'm not sure what Sam's advice is going to be, but my instinct is, it's there are ways in which you can reach out to your friend and let them know that they have, that you are a safe place for them to talk to, that you're a safe place, that you don't judge them, but that you're mm-hmm. maybe thinking that you want to make sure that their actions are supporting their authentic, healthy self. Mm-hmm. And caveat one more time before, like, I feel like I tried to say this in the beginning, but I want to say it one more time. Sometimes having sex with a bunch of different people is fine, is a healthy, fine thing. I don't mm-hmm. want to say that because of her actions, she is unhealthy. I don't want to connect having multiple sexual partners with being unhealthy. That is not a clear line to me. And I just want to say that explicitly, but mm-hmm. I think Maggie paints a very clear picture that it's more about, you know, one, we're in a pandemic, two, she's not sure if this is the authentic, healthy version of her friend, right? Mm-hmm. If her healing's being postponed. But yep. I think you have an opportunity to say, like, listen, friend, I really love you. I respect all of the choices that you make in your dating life and your sexual life. I don't judge any of them. I just want to make sure that you feel healthy. Have you stopped today to check in with you and what you need? Not about yep. what that Tinder date wants from you. Not about, well, has so-and-so texted me back? Not about how desirable I am, but how does me, friend, feel about me, friend, by myself?
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. And I think I would say that even leaving the behavior that you think is unhealthy out of the conversation
smart.
Is probably the best way to go. So instead of saying to your friend, I'm concerned about your behavior, instead say to your friend, I'm concerned about whether or not you're happy, right? Like, I really want right. you to be happy. What are some of the things that are bringing you joy today? Like, what are some of the things that are making you happy? How can I help support you in getting over this really hard thing that happened to you? And I think by focusing more on the person and the pain the person is going through, as well as like trying to reframe towards recognizing that good things are still happening and good things still exist, is probably going to serve you better yes. than approaching them about the way that the behavior is showing up, right? Like, I don't think that your friend is at this point where they're like at rock bottom and they like need some really tough love, right. like intervention style, right? Right. Like, I think what your friend is showing is that they're like unhappy right now. And what you can do as a friend is to ask them about their happiness, to talk about things that make you happy, talk about things that you love about them, and also create a space for your friend to talk about what I think is really at issue here, which is that she's feeling really hurt about these relationships. And being able to open up that conversation and say, like, I'm here if you want to talk about Doug or whatever his mm-hmm. name is. Like, Doug. I know that must have been really hard. Like, I know that it's like it sucks a lot to be broken up with or to be dropped like a brick, as apparently you say in Dutch. Mm-hmm. So I think leading from empathy and leading in an idea of I want us to focus on like what is making you happy is going to be really good for you. And that's, I think, that is what I have responded to best when people yes. have been concerned about me and the things that I'm doing, because it is really hard when you know that your behavior isn't a reflection of what you actually want, when right. people start interrogating you about that behavior.
Right. And I wonder too, because while you were talking and being intelligent and articulate, I was,
thank you.
I was trying, well, you said it perfectly. I just love hosting this show with you. I was imagining times in which I've felt the way Maggie felt, like I've mm-hmm. felt love and concern for my friend. And I'm trying to imagine like, what did I do? And the sad thing that I want to confess is that I think oftentimes we want to be in our place. You know what I mean? Like we want to stay in our own lane and we don't want to overstep mm-hmm. and we don't want to offend. Right. So we end up tiptoeing around the issue or avoiding it altogether. Like, honestly, Sam, I was imagining what would happen if I was like, you know, in a different life situation and acting in a way that you recognize was unhealthy for me. Like, at what tipping point would you feel comfortable saying, what's good, girl? You know, like we're really close. I guess that unless I brought it to you, when mm-hmm. would you feel, or how would you navigate that?
I would only say it in a deeper conversation about what you're going through.
Exactly. Right?
Like I would only say it to you when we are bitching at brunch and you're talking about how sad you are that that boy broke up with you. And then if you brought it to me and said like, are you, and now I just like keep sleeping with all of these guys or whatever, then I would be like, yeah, is that what you want? Like, I'm
happy?
Tea, no shade, no pink lemonade, but like, is doing this actually making you feel better? Like, I know it's probably making you feel better in the moment, but like,
and
I don't want you to add an extra layer of guilt about like the things that you're doing onto this sadness that you're already feeling about this breakup.
And I think I'm glad you answered it that way, because that's what I imagined. It would be like, you and I would come to that place in our friendship through a conversation, almost invited, right? But I'm also thinking mm-hmm. about those friends. I'm like thinking of one person in particular that like is a chronic, you don't know them actually, they're a New York friend. They're like mm-hmm. an acquaintance, I should say. They're like a chronic drama person. And I use that word pretty intentionally, you know, like, because they're in the stage of their life in which everything is intense, you know, and all of their friends, like the people that I am close with around them, recognize that some of their behavior is spiraling, right? Not a slut spiral, but just like an unhealthy spiral, right? You can see them making, it's like domino effect, bad choices for themselves because they haven't dealt with themselves, right? Mm-hmm. I can see it like a mile away on this person. No judgment, of course, because I recognize myself in them. And that friend group has yet to be as lovingly blunt as we're talking about, because the friend, the tornado talks about it without complaining about it, you know, doesn't say, mm-hmm. oh, I'm so unhappy, but like, it's like, ugh, so-and-so, it did this to me and it was crazy. And then I did this, or, I think I'm going to start dating this person, or I'm in this stage of my life. So they haven't identified it as a problem for themselves. So that friend group hasn't done what you just described, which is the door hasn't been opened. So they haven't addressed it. And I'm just wondering, like, where is the line? Because we can't control other people's feelings. We can't control other people's behaviors. Where's the tipping point? If Maggie's friend hasn't said, I'm unhappy with my behavior, how does Maggie bring it to the friend?
I think that that's more difficult, because like the first step to recovery in any sort of like unhealthy mm-hmm. behavior is admitting that you have a problem. And luckily for Maggie, it does sound like her friend is like trying to stop this behavior, which I think is like at least a marker that something needs to change. And so I wonder also, Maggie, if there's an opportunity for you to like be a helpful person in helping your friend maintain the boundaries that she is trying to put up for herself, right? Is it possible for you to say like, hey, would it be helpful for me to like call you at 8 o'clock every night so that we can have like a nice, friendly or like more in-depth conversation? Or is it, you know, do you want me to like go on your phone and delete your apps for you? Or like, do you want me to change
Sam did for me.
I know. Or do you want me to change your passwords on Tinder so that you can't like go on them? Like, there are things that you can suggest, but only I think when they open the door, right? And I think there are absolutely times when a person needs to have some like, we are going to close off this relationship if nothing changes types of conversation, right? Like a legitimate intervention. But I do think what I think is hopeful for me about your letter is that it does seem like your friend is like recognizing that this isn't bringing her joy, that this isn't making her happy, and that she doesn't really want to be doing it anymore. So right. I do think that there will be an opportunity for you to sort of bring this up in a helpful and positive way.
Right.
It's like, how can I help you do the thing that it seems like you've identified that you already want to do?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I really co-sign what Sam said earlier, which is don't even talk about the sexual encounters. Like, that's not what we're talking about here. That is a neutral behavior that is tacked on to that can be used as a coping mechanism, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the last thing that I would just say is, like, we can do all of this stuff too, and also nothing can change, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is an outcome that might happen because we actually have no ability to control other people. Mm-hmm. And so your friend needs to make these decisions about what she does with her body for herself.
Right.
And you need to, you need to get to a point where you either recognize the behavior is unsustainable for your relationship with her. Like, it's causing you so much pain that you can't be friends with her.
Right.
Or you just have to keep showing up and accept the fact that she is in charge of her own journey and she is in charge of the change that she wants to make, and that there's nothing you can do to force or cajole her into making the changes that you want to see for her.
Right. 100%. Okay, Maggie, thank you so much for writing, and thank you for being a good friend. Sam and I appreciate you and send you lots of love across the ocean.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for writing.
Y'all, as a self-employed person, as a mom of a toddler, I am always struggling with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all of that for me.
Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, you have full control over your subscriptions and a clear view of your expenses. You can see all your subscriptions in one place. And if you see something you don't want, Rocket Money can help cancel it with a few taps.
I love how the dashboard shows me this month's spending compared to last month, so I can clearly see my spending habits and check myself if needed. Plus, they'll help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. Rocket Money will even help try to negotiate to lower your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you, which I obviously love as a somewhat introverted conflict avoidant person.
Absolutely. Rocket Money has over 5 million subscribers and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/justbreakup.
That's rocketmoney.com/justbreakup. rocketmoney.com/justbreakup. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets, sweaters, and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and luckily I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year.
Quince has things like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. And the best part is that all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. This past month, I treated myself to a pair of new slippers because I'm in that hashtag mom life era of my life, in which I am never not in slippers. And these are 100% Australian shearling lined clog slippers. And I love that they're slip on, but they have those durable rubber outsoles. They're super cushy, super comfortable, but I feel like I can run outside to like take the trash out in them while also like staying warm and active in the house.
Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/justbreakup for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/justbreakup to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/justbreakup.
All right, our next letter is from Twisted Pretzel, who is writing to us from The Void. Trigger warning for sexual assault. Dear Sam and Sierra, first of all, I realize you might not feel comfortable answering my question because it is race-related and you identify as white, but I have spent months trying to figure this out, and there's no article on the internet nor person in my life who have been able to help me with this issue. I absolutely love your podcast, and I trust you can guide me towards what's best for me. So here's my problem. I have been in a long-distance relationship with my best friend, you can call him Alex, for almost a year now. We haven't gone a day without talking since we met, and he says he loves me, and I love him. For context, I'm 20 years old, and he is 24. I'm Latinx, and he's a white guy. A few months before meeting Alex, I had a short but traumatic experience with another white guy who seemed nice at first, but ended up revealing that he liked jokes about sexual assault, he supported Trump, and he fetishized my ethnicity. It's probably obvious, but I'm 100% against all those things. I hated myself for not realizing sooner and putting myself in a situation that led to months of intense emotional labor to heal from. I even told myself that I was never going to trust anyone again because of how easily the other person had fooled me. I spent the whole summer barely talking to anyone else and just focused on college and family. But my plans changed because I identify as asexual and I found out about an asexual dating app and just had to try it. I had about 50 short conversations with different people who were also exploring their sexuality, but those conversations didn't go anywhere. Then I met Alex, and although we are very different people, we were instantly invested in what we in getting to know each other. Everything was pretty much perfect for a long time, but around 6 months ago, he dropped a bomb that I've been trying to ignore since, but it seems impossible to. We both identify as being on the asexual spectrum, but we haven't fully figured out what it means for us yet. Our conversations about sexuality have led us to talk about things such as sex and masturbation. I consider those things to be completely positive and healthy, even when they're not my cup of tea. One night, Alex decided to reveal that he loved to watch porn that featured women of color. I had never explicitly told him how much of a problem this was for me, but he knew I had struggled to tell people where I was from because of how terrified I was of being seen as an other. I cried a lot when he, quote, confessed what he liked. I took it as a personal attack because of how heavy of the topic it is for me. I find the over-sexualization and fetishization of women of color incredibly problematic because it immediately reminds me of the millions of women of color who were raped and continue to be assaulted by white colonizers and people in general. So here was this person that I had a ton of love for, but liked something that made my blood feel like it was boiling. It was even more disappointing because I didn't expect to deal with this with another asexual partner. And also, was I just an object too? He noticed how much it unsettled me and promised that he wasn't going to do it again. I accepted his promise in an attempt to hold onto our relationship and tried to recover from that awful news. About a month later, he mentioned that he had gone back to what he calls his habit, and it seems like he had completely forgotten about the promise that meant so much to me. Based on my love for him and my desire to be an understanding person, I have been trying to reason my way out of my discomfort and convince myself that maybe it isn't that big of a deal. But it is a big deal for me. I've developed a hypothesis to try to explain it with trauma epigenetics. Maybe a Native American woman in my family tree was sexually assaulted by a white man, and my body is just meant to want to run away from this. Or maybe it is my asexuality and I just don't know enough about how attraction works. Maybe it is nothing more than a result of the fact that he had sex for the first time with a woman of color. Maybe it hurts because of the years of being discriminated against, my people being called animals by the president, or I'm way too sensitive. I don't know, but the thoughts of it still hurts. He has brought up his, quote, habit a couple of times since, and I have been avoiding talking about it because I feel like I will just want to end our relationship. I want to ask him to stop, but I get the feeling that he won't actually commit to it, and I don't want to be controlling. Should I keep waiting to see if time helps me get over it? Is it reasonable to take my feelings seriously enough to end this relationship? He's an awesome person, and I don't want to lose him. But seriously, I don't know how to get past this, and he doesn't think he is doing anything wrong. Any advice would be incredibly helpful. Thank you so much for taking time to read my letter, even if you don't answer it. And thank you for your podcast. It has helped so much. Oh, Twisted Pretzel, thank you so much for writing. We love you. And
absolutely.
Sam and I, first and foremost, we chatted about this letter before recording, and we just mostly want to say that, like, your feelings are real and your discomfort is real. Mm-hmm. And I see you doing a lot of labor to unpack this discomfort. And just for like 5 minutes, this first 5 minutes of this letter, I just want you to like say, nope, my feelings are real and my discomfort is valid, and I'm going to make space for them, because I mm-hmm. see you doing a lot of work to disjustify them. And I know that that labor is love. I know that that is an act of love for Alex, but you just don't need to do it right now. Sam and I are going to hold some space for you, that all of these feelings are real. This discomfort is real. This fetishization and the history of this colonization is real. So we just want to say that is all real.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes we have a knee-jerk reaction to the idea of being triggered, as if being triggered is a bad thing, right? Like, as if our reaction to the things that are happening to us is somehow not in line with what's happening to us. And that can be true, right? Like, if our emotional reactions to things are getting in the way of us actually sort of responding and being happy and healthy, that's absolutely something that you can work on with a therapist. But like, being triggered in and of itself is not a bad thing. It is a physiological and a psychological response to something that has caused you trauma or something that is causing you great anxiety. And that's not a bad thing. That's like a learned response. And so I want to say to you, I love the fact that you are trying to interrogate what is happening here. And you list all of these different reasons for why you might be triggered by it. Is it because of your asexuality? Is it because of the president? Is it because you've been discriminated against? Is it because of fetishization? And I want to say, yeah, like all of those things,
yes,
probably.
And. Yeah, totally.
Right. And I think it's important for you to do that work, to think about the ways in which this type of honestly over-sexualization of women of color triggers you. For sure. Like, I think that is a gift that you can give yourself to process through that and identify ways to cope with that, because it's not going anywhere. But I don't want you to do it so that your boyfriend can live in a false sense of serenity, right? Like, I don't want you to do it so that your boyfriend doesn't feel any discomfort. That's not interesting to me. And that's a disservice to yourself. I really do want you to interrogate some of these things, and I want you to do it maybe with the help of a loved one or with a therapist, but I want you to do it for you, because you want to move differently through this world, because you want to cope differently with a racist, xenophobic world, and not because you want your boyfriend to not be comfortable or not be uncomfortable with this conversation.
Right. Something that wasn't included in the letter that I am curious about is I invite you to make your boyfriend uncomfortable and tell him why it makes you so upset. I'm not sure if that happened, like if this happened, just fast forward in the episode. But I think, you know, people are not, especially, no one is born knowing everything, and no one is born able to love each other perfectly. And this is I want to invite you to use this as an opportunity, if you're choosing to stay with your boyfriend, to let him see your authentic feelings and your authentic discomfort. Not that this has to be a teaching moment for him, not that you have to teach him, but he might not understand. I'm not trying to, like, I don't know, get him off the hook or whatever. just sure. It wasn't explicit in the letter whether you got into why this was so upsetting to you. But I know that when I hear someone tell me what something really means to them, I rarely have to hear it twice.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was, I said this in a previous episode, I've just been thinking a lot about just the nuance of the world, the complexity of every situation. And just like in your letter, like you've given, this feels very muddy in your brain because you've tried to diagnose it in so many different ways, right? That it might be this, it might be this, it might be this. And like Sam said, yes, all of that is contributing to this triggered discomfort. And I want to add to that, that the idea that, you know, your boyfriend's desire, his pleasure that, I want to use the word fantasy because, something that I learned on a Netflix series, Sex Explained, like Sex, Explained, narrated by Janelle Monáe. Fantastic. I think it was my blind date once. If not, it'll be my blind date today.
It was your blind date once.
Damn.
You're still on the hook for another one.
Yeah. Janelle Monáe, no, not about her, even though she's fantastic, or they're fantastic. So in it, they explain that, you know, like something like 90% of all fantasies aren't actually connected to our actual sex life, that our sex life is a different world than our fantasy world. And that's why people can have fantasies or sexual fantasies about things that they wouldn't actually want to do in real life or wouldn't actually need to fulfill in real life. And why I'm bringing that up is because if this feels comfortable to you, because again, I would only accept this if you had room in your heart after you made room for your own discomfort, that your boyfriend's fantasies, your boyfriend's preference for porn might only be live in that fantasy world. I'm not saying that the world outside of his fantasy isn't a fucking racist, homophobic, xenophobic trash society, right? I'm not saying, right. You know, it sucks that his fantasy world reflects the oppressive, violent world, and history that you know too well. I don't want to say like, oh, cool. No, that's fine. I'm just saying that in all of the complexity of this situation, it's true that you probably have a genetic traumatic trigger response to this. It's also true that you're triggered by your past relationship. It's also true that your boyfriend might not know the implications of his desires. It's, you know, it's the yes and. Everything is everything can be true in this situation, which makes it that much harder to move on from, especially because what I got from your letter, Twisted Pretzel, is that like you're very thoughtful and you're very caring and you want to, just like you said, you want to be an understanding person. So everything that I read between the lines is that you're not making a lot of space for your discomfort because you're trying to work so hard to understand and make everything else fit comfortably, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I'm trying to say in a really clunky way is that like, it's a super fucking clunky, complicated situation and all of it can be true at once.
Absolutely.
But how do you hear your authentic, like voice, your authentic desires, your inner self through all the mental chatter, you know, how do you reach your intuitive needs through everything else that you're processing right now? And that's really difficult.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you talked about how you want to ask him to stop again. And for me, I don't think it's unreasonable in any way for you to ask him to stop, right? I don't think you should say, stop this. But I think if you are willing and able, right? If you want to do this, if you have the heart space to be able to do this, to talk to him about all of the things that you told us and how it makes you feel and how, you know, the presentation of women of color in porn is so fetishized and so debasing that you're deeply uncomfortable with it.
Right.
and offer him the opportunity to stop. And I think it's not controlling to say, this makes me deeply uncomfortable, and I would really like you to not do it. And because that's just establishing a boundary, right?
Like, right.
Knowing that he's doing this in his spare time is going to make you so uncomfortable in relationship with him that it just means that, like, he's not a bad person. It just means that there's incompatibility there, right?
Right.
Like, if he needs to do this thing, which, like, have him write in and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, right.
And you need him to not do that. That's a compatibility issue, and it's not controlling.
Right.
It's not manipulative. It is, like, just a deal breaker for you.
I know.
And it's okay to have deal breakers.
I'm so glad you said that too, because, like, the fact that he brought it up multiple times is the only time in which I was like, man, maybe this guy's just an asshole. You know, like, again, everybody's on their journeys. Nobody's a true asshole, but, like, that's the only, it's not knowing this person personally, right? Just getting to know them through the letter. I'm assuming that he's not a bad person if Twisted Pretzel loves him, right? So I'm not, yep. I'm assuming he's not a racist piece of shit, right?
Although I have loved many a bad man, so.
Right, true. Our love has nothing to do with, like, their quality. Damn, that is
I'm
true.
I'm just kidding. They are not bad men. They are just people on their own journeys.
Right, exactly. That don't align with us. So anyway, Twisted Pretzel, the only thing that tipped my scale towards maybe you should internalize this a little bit more, or maybe he's just not for you, is that he brought it up a ton of times. Like, maybe he doesn't understand why this is so problematic to you, and maybe you don't want to explain it to him. Maybe you want a partner who just is, like, on the same page with you, just gets it, because that is not too unreasonable to ask for. I think that's something that I had to teach myself when I was younger, is that all of the things that I was settling for, or being like, okay, well, I just have to deal with this, I didn't even give myself the opportunity to imagine a world in which I didn't have to teach my partner how to have an emotional, calm conversation with me, or you know? And so you just have to strike, like, you are the only person in this 3-person conversation that knows Alex, and not only knows Alex's heart, but knows how seriously he can take this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not reflecting to you, if he doesn't, it's like all white people can be taught about racism, and all white people can be taught about racist histories and things like that. It's not about learning facts. It's about making intentional personal change. It's about, it's about really going against the grain of our white supremacist teaching, right? And creating a new set of thinking, set of relating to the world, right? And so you're the only one that can truly judge right now. Is he just listening to what you're saying and letting it go? Or is he truly empathizing and changing, right? This is one of those situations in which I would say change behavior is the only true apology.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I'll say that, like, maybe I'll regret saying in, like, 3 hours is the reason why I brought up fantasies is I really do believe that fantasies are separate from our sex life. You know, do you fantasize about things that you don't actually do in bed?
Yeah.
Right?
Because I don't do anything in bed. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? And so if you haven't already, watch Sex Explained. I do think they go into alternative sexualities, like asexuality. Not that it's alternative, but less talked about sexualities. And the only reason why I say that is, like, maybe, like, homeboy should just not fucking tell you. Like, you know, like, maybe he should keep his... And that's hard because you're long distance, B, you're exploring sexuality. I know I talked a ton. I talked 100% more about my masturbation when I was long distance than when I'm living with my partner. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
We do not have sexy masturbation talk right now because we can have intimacy in other ways. So it's hard because you're long distance and that's how you're getting this sort of intimacy. You're exploring your asexuality, but, like, maybe he should just keep this to himself. And to that, I would finally add, it's just up to you and your inner intuition of whether or not you can let this go long term. And if you can't, I just want to say that's okay. Just like Sam said, maybe he's just not for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think even if we create space for the fact that like his fantasies and his what he's actually interested in are separate, the fact still remains that you're deeply uncomfortable with
exactly.
what he's doing.
Exactly. That is the TLDR that I wanted from you. Thanks. It's that all of these things can be true, but the hierarchy, the thing on top is you're uncomfortable, right?
Yes.
50 steps down is he might not mean anything by it. Well, who the fuck cares? Because it's not about his intent. It's about the impact.
Absolutely. And the other thing, just the last thing that I'll say that I think is, you didn't ask about, but I think is also important, is just this idea of like queer scarcity. And I think sometimes we as queer people get into relationships with folks, especially when we are like starting out on our queer journeys, get into relationships with folks and then feel like we can't leave because there's this idea that there aren't other people like us out there. And just want to like,
that applies.
I don't know
to,
if this is happening to you, right? Like, I don't want to put this on you, but I do want to say that there are other ace people out there that are ready and willing to be in partnership with you. Like you even talked about how on the app you were on, you had 50 conversations, right? Like there are plenty of ace people out there, and there will be someone that isn't going to make you this deeply uncomfortable with their fantasies and with their inability, at least right now, to sort of process through what those fantasies mean in the reality that is a racist and xenophobic society where folks of color, Black folks, Indigenous folks are continually under attack. And so just to put that out there, because I know that I really struggled in my early relationships as a queer person with being like, well, this is all I got, because like, who else is going to love me? There's only like 10 of us, right? And that's not true. There are people all over the country and in your neighborhood who would love to embark on an asexual relationship with you.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Okay, Twisted Pretzel, we love you so much. And we see your discomfort and we're going to make space for it. And
absolutely.
We know you can find that inner voice. She's talking to you right now. You just have to quiet the rest of the chatter and prioritize her.
Absolutely.
All right. We love you. Thanks very much for writing.
Thank you so much. All right. Our third and final letter comes from Castaway, who is writing from the Great Southern Land. Dear Sam and Sierra, I would first like to echo all the beautiful sentiments that are sent your way at the beginning of all the letters that you read and respond to. Discovering your podcast at the beginning of the pandemic has allowed me to dive into myself in ways I had not considered before. And for that, I am truly grateful. That was very sweet. Thank you.
Very, very sweet.
I'm a white cisgendered straight woman in her early 30s in a long-term live-in relationship with a cisgendered straight white man. And what I would like for you to discuss is the stigma and shame that surrounds changing your mind or falling out of love. I'm an extremely lucky person in so many ways. I moved to Australia by myself when I was 24, and this country has welcomed me with open arms, offering me opportunities I wouldn't have encountered and becoming more of myself than I ever thought possible. I met my boyfriend on an online dating app a couple of years into my Australian journey when I was just starting my master's, and now I am a PhD student and lecturer. I am someone with a type A personality. I am very goal-driven, quite independent, and tend to do too much at any given time, something I am trying to work on, but also gives me great purpose. My partner and I have had many issues, as couples do over the years. Mismatched expectations in life and love, as well as differing love languages, have cratered our relationship to the point where I have been thinking that we aren't right for each other anymore, which has been very much exacerbated by COVID-19. There is still so much I want to do, which includes potentially moving to Europe to teach or do a postdoctorate or even just for work. I'm not sure what opportunity is going to come my way, but I want my life to be an adventure. And I know that my partner wouldn't have the tools to do these things without relying on me, whereas I can pretty much do anything by myself. But the guilt is destroying me. Mm. It feels like everything I read is about toxic relationships or codependency. But what about just simply falling out of love with someone and feeling like they have become so dependent and reliant on you that you feel this incredible amount of pressure to take care of them? I have tried to encourage him to reconnect and strengthen his relationship with his friends and family, the more I have felt like he has chosen to rely on me for all mental support, which has also led me to wanting pretty much nothing to do with him sexually, which is very much his love language, touch, as well as words of affirmation, where mine is acts of service. The shame and guilt of wanting to leave is making me hate myself because it has become really unbearable. I feel truly horrible that a kind, respectful, and caring, albeit uninteresting man loves me, and all I can think about is being alone and starting over. I also battle with my own insecurities and fear of being lonely, and that I will find myself regretting this decision. Please tell me how you would handle this. Be brutal. I can handle it. Thank you for reading. Best, Castaway.
Castaway, thank you so much for writing. Shout out to Australia. We will to you one day. I'm manifesting.
Yes, it'll be great.
Okay, Castaway, you know what to do, girl. You know what to do, and it sounds like you've definitely, you know, you've resolved to it. You're just wrestling with the guilt. But it's possible to be sad and still make the right decision for yourself. It's possible to feel guilt and still make the right decision for yourself. You are strong. You are loving. You are capable. And you need to do what's right for you. We will never move through this world and make everyone happy. We will never move through this life and not hurt and disappoint people. That is a part of being a human. And it really sounds like you have some huge goals. And on top of that, you have some disparities or incompatibilities with your partner right now that is making you feel as though you're ready to move on. On top of that, though, Castaway, like, sometimes it's just time. Like, I feel like from your letter, you're looking for, like, there's no adultery, there's nothing terrible. It's just that, like, we've fallen out of love. And sometimes those are the hardest breakups because we want to point to an infidelity and be like, that's why our relationship is broken. We don't want to point to ourselves and be like, I just fell out of love, because that means we're broken. That means we're the fucked up ones. But that's just not true. People fall out of love constantly, all the time. Unfortunately, it is. And fortunately, because falling out of love means we're making space in our hearts for new, better, more authentic love.
Absolutely. All of that. And also, I would encourage you to look at attachment styles. And actually read the book Attached that we have shouted out on this podcast a number of times. Because I 100% trust you that you are exactly right in feeling that this guy is not the guy for you. This guy is not the partner for adventures that you are looking for. And also, I see a lot in your letter that I struggle with as a person who has had a dismissive or avoidant attachment style, which is that it's not always like in the beginning of dating that this fear of intimacy starts to come out, right? It's not always like, oh, I'm going to ghost you after 2 months, right? Sometimes it is like, wow, getting into a relationship with the person means that I have to take into account what they want to do with their lives, right? And that was a huge issue for when Peter and I started dating and we started getting really close. And like, I realized like, oh, if I decide to move up and move to Seattle, like, I'm going to have to ask him if that's okay. And right. That like really freaked me the fuck out. So like, I don't want to say like, this is happening to you, because my job is not to diagnose anyone with their attachment style or with anything about their lives. Cause like,
that is 100%
you wrote me this letter
job.
And I like, I don't know your life, right? Like, you know your life better than I do. And also would encourage you to think about, is this a pattern with me? Is this something that happens a lot where suddenly I get to a point and I'm like, I feel like this person is not necessarily holding me back, but this person is holding me accountable in a way that I feel really uncomfortable with, or this person is asking for a level of intimacy that I don't want to give them. Because that is something that I think folks with dismissive or avoidant attachment styles struggle with, is that even though they get over the initial hump of like, yes, I returned that person's calls, like, we've got a good thing going, like, we're both comfortable, we're both independent people. And then suddenly it's like, yeah, we can still be whole independent people And also I have to ask them if I'm going to move somewhere or like, right. And also I have to take their feelings into considerations when I make a decision sometimes. And that's really scary, but that is what intimacy is. That is what relationships are, is like you get wonderful things out of being in partnership with someone. Mm-hmm. You get wonderful things that like literally scientifically make your brain feel better by being in partnership with someone. But it does mean that for us people who feel weird about intimacy, that we have to be uncomfortable in some ways in order to let people into our lives.
It is fascinating that we are as close as we are.
I know, right?
I love us because we're just so different when it comes to our attachment style. That's so funny.
Oh, absolutely. We might have a person who might be an avoidant attachment style. This is so exciting that I get to answer a question.
I'm so glad we have a podcast because now we're like legally bound through an LLC.
That's right. We are shared owners in Just Break Up LLC. Yeah.
That's all the intimacy I need. Stay in
New York, okay?
You bastard. Okay. Anyway, Castaway. Everything Sam said is, but you read in it more dismissive than it's like that. And
yeah, I think that both things can absolutely be true at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. That this person isn't the person for you because he doesn't want to go on adventures, right?
Right.
Like that's absolutely legit. Like if he doesn't want to move to Europe, cool, then break up with him. Mm-hmm. But what might also be at play here is something that is afraid of that feeling of being tied down or that feeling of being beholden to someone. And that's not a bad thing, right? Like attachment styles aren't bad things. They're not
totally,
they're not neuroses or like, they're not
diagnoses,
illnesses.
Yeah.
Right. They are just the ways that we have been taught to love other people and to protect our own peace. And so I didn't mean to say it as like a disparagement. I meant to say it as an invitation to find out what is motivating you in this conversation so that either you can look at this relationship with a different perspective, or next time you're getting into one, think about the ways in which this man made you feel because he was asking too much of you, but maybe not too much.
Right. I'm glad you talked about it because we've also never talked about that attachment style showing up later in relationships. And it's so, mm-hmm. I feel like I understand you better too as a person, as a friend after hearing that. But I think something that Castaway shared about, you said something about protecting your like peace. Mm-hmm. And I guess to segue from Sam's attachment style conversation, I want to end by asking Castaway, like, what does your peace look like? What does your partner bring to your life? And like Sam said, is it threatening your understanding of yourself? Is it threatening your safety, you know, or is it just not enough? Because it's okay if it's not enough. We try people on as much as we don't want to, as much as that's such a weird thing to say, we try people on when we date them. Mm-hmm. We mash our lives together and we see how it fits. And maybe it fits better for one person, but the other one's like, I've outgrown this, or I'm ready to move on, or I want to go somewhere. I want you to come with me. And the one party says, I want to stay just the way it is. So I'm just wondering what is this relationship bringing you? And then I want to give you full permission to leave it if you're ready to leave it.
Absolutely.
You don't need a blow up fight. You don't need it to fall apart. You Mm-mm. don't, you know, to break up, you don't need things to be on fire. You just need them to be not enough.
Absolutely.
And defining not enough too, I even regret saying that because a lot of people in your situation, I've been there, been like, well, we're happy. We get along fine. We have a good family relationship. We go on trips. It's fine. You know, that sounds like enough to me, but we're talking about that inner intuition, inner voice, the clarity that comes only from your heart being its most authentic self. Is your heart mm-hmm. feeling that way? Do you feel free to be your authentic self? That's the question. And if not, then you have the full permission to say, I need to go find more life somewhere else or different life somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. When I first read this, I was like, okay, go. It's time to break up. But then your attachment style thesis made me think differently.
No, and I didn't. I almost didn't bring it up because I didn't want to throw that into this. Like, I think,
right.
I think honestly, Castaway, based on what you've told us,
right. There's lots of mismatchness. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not a good match, but like I said, you know, I think that it's good to examine this and say, like, is it that he doesn't want to move to Europe, or is it that he would move to Europe with me and it would feel like I had to take care of him? Right. Which is
totally.
Like legitimate totally. And also something that a very avoidant person would say. So like,
yeah,
I don't totally. Think that it's necessarily like you're making the wrong decision if you're making decisions based on your avoidant attachment style. I just think it's something to be aware of so that you can make a more informed decision about what you want to do and what you want to do with other partners in the future.
Yeah. I'm thinking about too, I recently read something about courage that was like, no one is fearless. No one is without mm-hmm. fear. It's moving with fear that builds the courageous like muscles in our heart or whatever.
Absolutely.
And I want to like adapt it just a little and say, you know, rarely in life are we 100% sure of something. Rarely in life is the path so clear that it almost makes the decision for us. Unfortunately, we are the ones that have to muscle through all of that mental chatter, all of the confusion, and decide really where to put our first foot in front of the other, you know? Mm-hmm. And I say that maybe to give you a small amount of comfort that like, it sounds like you're, you know, you were Googling toxic relationships and you just can't find what's wrong, you know, like what's wrong with me? Why am I falling out of love with somebody? I say that to maybe bring some comfort because we all find ourselves in situations that are very complicated and bittersweet and maybe complicated is the wrong word. Like we find ourselves in situations that aren't clear all the time. But we are all capable of making hard decisions. We're all capable of making choices that lead to a higher understanding. And I guess maybe the weirdest thing I'll end on that Sam will love is that it's just a choice that whatever happens is going to be the right thing for you, whether you stay Absolutely. With that person. And then maybe 6 months from now, you have more clarity and you're like, no, I need to break up. Or in 6 months, you're like, I'm so glad I didn't break up. Or you break up and you see what life looks like without him. Mm-hmm. No choice that you will make right now will be the wrong choice. It will Absolutely. All, any choice will lead you to greater understanding.
Yes, which is what all choices in our lives do, is right. always lead us to a right. greater, or I would say a different understanding.
Right, totally. Okay, Castaway, we hope that this helps, and we love you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for writing. All right, everyone, this brings us to the blind date segment of our episode. This is when we try and set you up with something that we think you're really going to like. This week, we want to set you up with
The Umbrella Academy on Netflix. Have you seen it yet?
I watched one episode and it was so violent that I had to stop.
Violent? Really? The first? Oh, yeah. It is very... it reminds me a lot of the Watchmen book, mm-hmm. graphic novel and movie, and that cinematic style. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't call it particularly violent, but maybe... Maybe I'm just numb like everyone else in the world. Yeah. I mean, like, don't let your like small children watch it.
Yeah, no. Or like your Sam who doesn't do well with like person-on-person violence.
Oh, my Sam. Okay. So it was originally a graphic novel. I know I need to read the graphic novel upon watching the first season and starting the second season. I have thought it unfolded a little bit slow in the beginning, but I could tell it was based on a book, which made me want to read it. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The acting in it is really fun. There's great characters. Mostly it's not, this is not like my overflowing endorsement of the show. I've just found it really fun to kind of like mm-hmm. get into a new world, because it is, there's some magic powers. It's like part Watchmen, part X-Men, part, I don't know, Hunger Games, maybe not. you know, it's like one of those things. It's a world. It's a new world that you get into. And it's like part Phantom Toll Booth, which is a children's book. So it's like, it's just been a super fun thing to dive into. I kind of like burned out on Netflix, as we were saying at the beginning of this show, like in the beginning of quarantine. So I haven't been watching a lot of TV, and it's been really fun to watch. The episodes are also like 50 minutes long. So it's not a bingeable show, because, or else you'd like to spend your whole day watching Netflix, which no shame in that.
Yeah, no, I'm like, there's like 18 people who are like, I binged that in one
totally,
day.
Totally. And that's, I mean, been there, done that, like with Vampire Diaries like 20 years ago.
Oh, Vampire Diaries. That should have been my blind date last week.
But I like it because it reminds me of back when shows were released one at a time, or like more regularly, that I've been kind of just like, it's been fun to re-enter a world slowly like that. So that's what's been bringing me joy this week. And I hope you enjoy it, called The Umbrella Academy. And I know I need to buy the graphic novel in addition to the Netflix show.
Got it.
Okay.
Alrighty. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. You can like us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Just Break Up Pod.
You can slide into our DMs, send us your favorite relationship memes, but most importantly, you can submit your questions about all matters of the heart at justbreakuppod.com, which is also where you can find our merchandise.
Please leave us a 5-star rating and review, and consider supporting us on Patreon. If you support us on Patreon for as little as $5 a month, you will get an additional bonus weekly episode. That's patreon.com/justbreakuppod. This literally keeps the mics on, and it helps us reach more brokenhearted souls who need two strangers giving them relationship advice.
Original music, recording, editing, and producing by our good friend Big Cats. Make sure to check out his podcast, The What If Podcast. And remember, your intuition is speaking to you. It might have a very small voice. It might not be very loud, but it's trying to give you the clarity that you want. Try to quiet the chatter around you. Try to settle your heart to hear your most authentic desires. Your intuition is familiar, and it's trying to help you. It knows you more than anyone else. And if you listen, you can hear it. And if all else fails,
just break up.